The Buddha's enlightenment, one of the images the Buddha liked using is on his very enlightenment of one of the Bodhi tree, one of the first things he said is, "O house builder, thou art seen. Thou shalt build this house no more. The rafters and structure are broken. I am awakened and free." And what we're trying to do in training is see really what makes up the self that makes this very fragile being that gets hurt so easily. You know, a dirty look can hurt you. Just one cross word can hurt. Plus, the body's pretty fragile too. It doesn't take much. You know, I sometimes think, God, how have I gotten this far without messing up anything? You know, destroying any part of my body. And a lot of training is seeing what we make in the self. And there's an image that the Buddha, and it's actually understanding the self that allows us to see what we need to let go of and how we can dissolve the very things that are causing us suffering. Because as long as we cling to things, and one of the ways we cling to things is we cling deeply to how we feel and what's happening currently in our house, in our life. And the Buddha had a great image that I like, which is, and here's a quote from the Buddha. "In a guest house of monks, people from the east may take lodging, or people from the west, north, or south may come to stay. People from all the different castes may come and take lodging there. Brahmins, workmen, menials. Oh, similarly, O monks, there arise in this body various kinds of feelings. There can arise pleasant feelings, painful feelings, and neutral feelings. Worldly feelings that are pleasant, painful, and neutral, and spiritual feelings that are pleasant, painful, and neutral." And I like, and it's actually a famous image of the Buddha, the guest house. Because we don't possess these feelings, and we won't be free as long as we possess all these guests that come. And whatever you're feeling is a guest. And part of training is that we always have these guests, and we can say, we don't want this guest. I don't want to feel this. I don't want this to be happening. But a lot of training is, how can we welcome whatever happens? And actually trust that it'll convert. You know, it's like if you stay around, it'll actually, you know, it isn't fundamentally, like anger isn't the fundamental nature of things. And all of training as the offertory kind of was in compassion, love, and wisdom is the guests that are there when they see their own nature. And when you actually see the real nature of the feelings, the anger dissolves and there's compassionate acceptance of whatever's there. And we have to be willing to accept whatever shows up in our lives, you know, and whatever we feel, whatever we encounter is our training. And this is, and we actually free ourselves by not taking possession of them. They're all just passing through. You know, they're just, and they keep changing, like the anger changes into love at times. I mean, haven't we ever been angry with somebody we love? You know, and if you really look at it, if we really love them, the anger isn't the part that stays. You know, and, you know, and a lot of times just to see what it is these guests are, like, just the nature of wanting, you know, something actually will create a problem because we're trying to hold on to the guest. Rather than just realizing it's not that big a deal. Whatever guests show up, they come and they go. And it's like in meditation, wanting to be still and peaceful. It's not very helpful. You know, you have to just welcome whatever comes up when you sit. Whatever comes up in your day. And if you feel lousy, oh, you bow to your lousiness. and just realize this is the guess that you have. You hate something, you're battered with it. It won't stay that way. It's just a temporary guess. And you let it come. And you let it go. And when we take the...
Sorry to interrupt you, but it is a temporary guess unless we don't let go of it. And then it becomes us, a permanent...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the thing that frees us is not making it permanent, but seeing it as a guess that we still have to treat well. You know, like I hate something. Well, we have to treat that hate well. You know, be willing to put up with it. It doesn't help to say, wow, I shouldn't hate, and then be hate and hate yourself for hating. You know, be angry at yourself for being angry. I mean, I've had, you know, it's not uncommon somebody will come to me and say, I can't believe this upsets me after all these years of training. It's a very common passing thought, like, I shouldn't be upset at this. Rather than just realizing whatever it is, it is. If you don't cling to it, it'll come and go. And you focus on right action. And the right action is to treat whatever there is well. If you treat the anger well, you're not following the anger or following the greed or the desire. You're just seeing it and just accepting that it's there. And it's okay. You know, whether it's pleasant feelings, painful feelings, you know, whatever it is, it's nothing's going right or wrong. These are just guests, and we're a guest house. Whether we like it or not, you know, we'll always be a guest house. You know, and we'll always have guests that aren't the best behaved guests. You know, it's like, it's almost like raising children. You know, they're not, you know, God, you know, they're not always the way we want them to be. You know, and wanting something, like just wanting, for instance, in meditation, wanting to be still and peaceful. The wanting gets in the way. You know, you have to have right view and realize it's okay. Nothing's going wrong. It's fine to sit there and be agitated. You know, to sit there and think, wow, this feels uncomfortable. You know, and nobody really wants, you know, we don't seek it out. But this is what we have. You know, because we're actually, in a way, subduing the confusion. And the confusion that makes us deluded is thinking this stuff is us. You know, I am this desire, this greed, this hate. When it's just the guests coming and going. And the way the Buddha, and one of the images under the Buddha that they use under the Bodhi tree, is at times he felt like he's being shot with arrows. And they often have images of this. And the Buddha, through his acceptance of whatever it was, converted them all into flowers. And the same way as if we love whatever it is and show compassion to whatever it is, it'll convert. While if we choose to resist and kind of go, I don't want this. You know, you can just think of like a small child kind of being upset where I am not going to eat this broccoli. And, you know, you can see the face getting red and, you know, all those things a little kid will do. And realize that's often us with what's happening to us. You know, it sounds more profound, like, I don't want to lose my job, or I don't want this person, you know, to leave me, or I don't want, you know, people to die from this, whatever is going on. But, you know, it's the nature of things.
Question.
Yeah.
If we don't want, you said this a few sentences back, our meditation, or we don't want the enlightenment, where's the motivation come from other than perpetuating desire for, you know, like,
there is,
for enlightenment?
In a way, we're pointing ourselves in a direction. It's like, so we're going in the footsteps of the Buddha. And we trust that that'll take us where we want to go. But whether it would be like going, let's say you're hiking and you're climbing a mountain. And I remember being on trails where I'm climbing the mountain, but the trail's going downhill for a ways. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be going. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, this is the last thing I want is to be going downhill when I know I'm going to just have to go back. You know, this is all like, you know, creating extra work for me. But if you trust the path, you don't get caught up in the scenery of what's going on. You trust that it's enough to follow the teaching. So you don't meditate saying, I want to be peaceful and enlightened now. It won't help. Just like if you sit there saying, I want to be peaceful, you'll never get very far in meditation. Because you have to accept the non-peaceful parts and realize it's okay. It'll sort itself out in the long run. You know, and that if you keep on the path, it will lead you to where you want to go, which is, yes, we want on one hand the fruit of training, peace, joy, happiness. You know, it's like the Buddha said, all I teach is how to free ourselves from suffering. But to free yourself from suffering, you often have to accept suffering. It'd be like physical therapy. You want your shoulder to get better. You often have to do painful things to make it unpainful. And if you say, I don't want pain, but I'm not willing to put up with this pain, you may have a permanently painful shoulder for the rest of your life. Because the only way to get free of pain is to actually go through pain. And I actually remember somebody just who used to just keep telling his physical therapist, you're my torturer. You know, I come here and you torture me for hours, because he had some rather difficult physical conditions, and it was very, very painful to go through all this physical therapy. So yes, you don't want pain, but you have to accept that actually it's okay to have the pain if you trust that if you embrace what's there, all the pain is good pain in the sense it's leading you in the right direction. Just like whatever happens in your life, whatever you're feeling, whatever you're encountering, wherever you are, if you approach it with the right attitude of mind, all of it is a vehicle that'll take you, help you realize the truth. And every time you don't want what you're encountering, what you're feeling, what you're happening, you're taking a step in the wrong direction. You know, because that won't, in the end, free you. Because you're solidifying delusion in some sense. Just as a way, if you spend all your time upset at one of your guests, you can think, well, this guest is a problem. You know, it's keeps making a mess, keeping me up at night.
And they don't leave.
And this accepting attitude doesn't seem to be helping them. And we're not accepting the guest in the sense we want to perpetuate the behavior or the bad feeling, because that would be wrong view. The right view is how do we have compassion for whatever it is that's there, and just let it come and go. Thus, if you feel bad, if you don't make a problem out of it, it'll come and go. You hate somebody. Well, if you stop telling yourself how awful it is and just look at them with right view, and this is a Buddha, it'll abate, you know. Even if they're difficult, what difference does it make? What's really being hurt when you have an unwelcome guest? And say, well, it'd be much more comfortable to have. You know, just like with people, yeah, you're forced to be with somebody who's difficult. What's the problem? You know, it's difficult, so that's fine. You know, and the nature of progress is, the progress isn't us spending all our time with the guests we want to be with. progress will be made by us being willing to put up and in a way convert the guests we don't want to be with. And the conversion is just by wholeheartedly accepting whatever's there. Not perpetuating it, but accepting it. You know, and then we'll see through it. You know, and just like the structure of the house, in a way, the structure of our house is all the things that we are clinging to. And if we look at it with right view, we'll stop clinging to any of it, both the good feelings and the bad feelings. You know, just like, because neither of them are really fundamentally important any more than it'll be any deep significance to what happens at the potluck. You know, it's like if you get a good meal, we'll still be eating again in a few hours. And if you let's say for some reason, you know, there's nothing, you know, you can eat or you have to leave or something, we'll eat again. At least there's a statistically a very high probability. And if you don't, that's okay too. And a lot of things is how can we, you know, we all live in lives with a lot of stuff going on. You know, obligations, schedules, needs. You know, and if we're not careful, we're suddenly, this is a house of self. This is a structure. And we carry it around with us. Have you ever been on vacation and you're still worried about something at work or something you've left behind? It's like, you know, it's like, you're lying on the beach somewhere and you're still complaining about something or upset about something. And this is really what wears us up and exhausts us. It's not, never think what's tiring in your life is what you're doing. What's tiring in your life is what you're carrying around. You know, if you just let go of the stuff when it happens, it's not that big a deal, you know. But if you carry it around, suddenly you're lying in bed and you're still seeing what you're carrying. And
well, it's hard not to identify with everything that comes through us. You know, it's coming through me. It's obviously me. It's great to not be attached to anything that's coming through.
Well, you're trying. You don't jump to not identifying with anything, but you're trying. It's like all of training, it's a gradual process of identifying less and less and trusting and applying the Dharma to whatever it is so you can tell yourself, not this is a, whatever you're feeling something, this is not me. This is just something passing through me. And in a way you're giving the delusion the teaching. The delusion is that it is you. You know, and of course it takes wisdom just like to see, oh, house builder, thou art seen. Of course it takes great insight to see the house build, to see what really makes the self. It takes a lot of training and practice. It's not like, well, you can sit down, I know me. Actually, you don't usually know yourself that well. One of the things I always like reminding people of is if you ever want something sobering, would be to ask a dozen people who know you well to describe, to have them describe who you are and get all these different views, usually which aren't the ones you have of yourself. Because, you know, we don't actually see ourselves that clearly. You know, we see ourselves through a thick fog. You know, and part of training, and when the fog just starts clearing up, there's less and less there. You know, it's like we're almost clinging to dreams. Just like what somebody thought about us. It still makes me smile sometimes how vividly I can remember somebody's opinion of something I did 40 years ago. They either liked or didn't like something. And it has such meaning to me that I'm still lugging it around like, wow. This person was not fair or was, you know, complimented me on something, you know, or thought something I did was wonderful or miserable, and I'm still, in a way, giving it an importance it doesn't have. either to bolster me or to pull me down. Just like the same way we can often remember vividly things our parents said to us. And it's nothing wrong with remembering it, but in a way you're trying to let go of its importance. You know, one of the things that was a revelation to me was just looking at my parents, not as my parents, but just as people. Ordinary people. You know, like, drop the role of mother, father, just see them as people. And then they became pretty ordinary, rather nice, luckily in my case, nice people, you know, who didn't have great insight into almost anything, but they were very nice. You know, who never, you know, just like my father was sweet, but he never really paid much attention to me, you know, it's never particularly, but we can hold on to all of this. You know, and we're taming our troubled thoughts by not putting energy into them and making them, by making them ours, like we have to solve this. Never feel like you have to solve, you know. People are always trying to solve and resolve things. Rather than realizing, you know, a lot of things don't get resolved. You just have to let go. You know, it's like a difficult relationship to your family. You don't solve it. You put up with it. You know, it's not like, wow, I'm going to get my, this to be the perfect, and, you know, wow, the way I always wanted my, you know, my relationship is just like in couple, you know, when you're a couple, you don't, you know, it rarely lasts for a long time that this is, I have everything the way I want it to be. You know, usually you just let go of it and realize this is what I have. The good outweighs the bad. I've made a commitment to it and I'm going to put up with whatever it is. And realize there's, you know, there's good, you know, and just see the good and love what's there. Rather than kind of thinking, how do I get, you know, like that great delusion of somebody getting together with somebody because they want to, in a way, change them. You know, which isn't that unusual.
I'm not going to get them to be more like me. Then I don't like them.
Oh, yeah. I've actually realized, I remember working with another monk at the Abbey, and we were having some difficulties, and realized we're too much alike. You know, we're too much like each other. We're opinionated about the exact same things. And it was, you know, and we both, you know, had some of the same strengths and weaknesses. And it was very difficult being around him because I didn't like somebody who had the same weaknesses as me. I worked much better when I had somebody who was very complimentary, you know, like what she was good at was actually what I wasn't good at. And, and we're trying just to be, a lot of training is just, instead of identifying with what we're experiencing, being willing just to see what it is that we're experiencing and really see it. You know, when you start seeing anger for what it is or grief for what it starts to dissipate a bit. That's why blindness really helps. You know, blind greed, you know, is what a lot of greed is. You know, just like blind lust. You know, it's like, you know, I don't even think, you know, people will, you know, and we've probably all experienced kind of the blindness of certain strong emotions. And if you just sit still and see what's going on, you know, and not identify with the feelings and just think, okay, what's really going on? For instance, when you eat something, what's really going on? It actually cuts through a lot of greed just to pay attention to what you're doing. because it's actually not a big deal when you pay attention to it. You know, eat a piece of chocolate and pay attention, just a piece of chocolate. You know, when you really look at the sensation, there's not that much there. But think of how much time you can think about eating something. You know, you can dwell on that, or whatever your greed is, or desire is, or whatever it is. You know, it's even why at times I have to be aware when I just look forward to something too much, how I'm probably going to be disappointed. Because it's hard to have anything be, you know. I mean, we've probably all had the experience of really looking forward to see somebody, and then it was rather ordinary. It didn't quite meet our... It wasn't quite as special as we wanted it to be. Or for them, it wasn't as special as we wanted them to be. Or it became ordinary, or they even irritated me after a short time. Wow, I was looking forward to seeing them, and they're getting on my nerves. You know, and we have to realize in a way it's like we're often playing tapes of the past and dwelling on it or even kind of endlessly rehashing it and kind of clinging to whatever those strong feelings are that of either failure or anxiety or upset or fear. You know, and if we take all these feelings and thoughts as real, we feel bound by them. You know, just take a good worry. You know, how much it can bind you. God, what happens if this happens? Or God, I don't want this. I mean, one of the examples of really taking something the wrong way is a very common experience where people will have something happen, and what they'll say repeatedly is, I didn't want this to happen. Or this is the very thing I didn't want to happen. Almost like, whatever goes wrong, you never wanted it to, you know. It's like, you know, if my car dies, you know, it's never something. Well, I woke up this morning and I wanted my car to die. Or I wanted my back to go out. Or I want, you know... Or I wanted to lose my wallet or whatever. Did you have something?
Oh, no, it just popped into my head that it's very similar to, I found it in the last place I looked. You always find it in the last place you look.
It's the first place.
Well, actually, one of the ways I've been surprised at delusion is, and it shows you just perception. It's looking for something. And looking for, like, I've had it where I misplaced my wallet. And I look for it repeatedly. And I actually manage not to see it where I look for it. You know, it was like, I remember, like, because it's all this work when you lose your wallet. It's like, God, do I have to cancel it? You know, cancel all my credit cards, get a new driver's license, you know, do this whole rather tedious procedure. So I'm looking for my wallet, and I knew I had it in my car and couldn't find it and kept looking for it and looking for it. And I knew, I thought, I had it when I got back in the car. So I looked, I remember looking on top of my dashboard and not seeing the wallet. And finally, I, like a day, and I'm about to concede, and I walked by the car, and there on top of the dashboard was my wallet. But it was funny, my wallet was black and the dashboard was black. And I just didn't... I had to look at it from the outside to see the wallet, but I had thought I had looked this thoroughly. I mean, I thought this is where I could have left my wallet. You know, it was like the logical place, because occasionally I would put it on my dashboard, and so I looked there, and I thought, and I just couldn't believe that I had looked there two or three times and managed not to see. And I feel that's true of a lot of things in my life. You know, that we just don't see our karma, even if we're looking, because we're...
Well, what's that story? Is it, you know you left it or lost it somewhere over here, but you look over here because the light's better.
And it's and you have to kind of trust that. You know, it's like the image they used in the offertory in Buddhism, that of somebody having a jewel on his forehead and he's looking everywhere for it, and he never knows what he's looking for is right between his eyes, you know, kind of right there. And you can spend your life looking for something, but you already possess the jewel. And in a way, a lot of training, instead of getting caught up with all these things, is realize the jewel is there. The real thing we want, we're seeking, we can find if we're really willing to practice. Even if we get the right guests, they won't stay. You know, there's nothing we can grasp with it. And because when we're ready just to be with whatever we encounter, whatever we feel, whatever difficulty, we can touch kind of a primordial stillness, an openness that embraces whatever's there, that you realize isn't being touched by these seemingly storms, you know, of feelings and thoughts and all the stuff that seems so seemingly important. You know, it's, you know, and that's the real, that's the real refuge that the Buddha was teaching. That's what the Dharma, this is the Dharma, that's what the Dharma is telling us to do. You know, is to find that real. You know, if we're not careful, a lot of life just makes us harden our attitudes and thoughts. You know, and we just solidify our delusions, solidify the house. Just like people will solidify themselves that their life's a failure, for instance, for some reason. Or, you know, they lost their opportunity at something. You know, just like I've met a few people over the years who are still grieving for a relationship that went astray when they were young, and, you know, they're retired now, and they're still having a grief for something that went wrong, you know, all the way past back, and they've been kind of clinging to that for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, and it's all like holding on to a dream because they may not have, you know, it's just another person, and, you know, you don't even know if it ever would have worked, or they may have just, you know, just like been with the person and realized, God, this, you know, isn't what you wanted to. Just like I met people who spent forever getting themselves qualified for a job, and then realizing when they were working at it that they hate their job. I mean, this is not that uncommon. You know, it's like you have an idea in your mind. Oh, I want to do this. It's like somebody I remember telling me how they did all this stuff to be a nurse. And then they started nursing and they hated nursing. They really didn't like dealing with all that stuff. You know, like, and so they stopped nursing and, you know, did menial jobs for a while, and then realized, oh, it became a teacher, and they really liked teaching. But when, you know, in their head, being a nurse was like, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to help people, and, you know, actually emptying bedpans just wasn't, you know, and dealing with bodily functions, and this wasn't something they liked. And a lot of it isn't having an ideal, you know, you get the image here, okay, you have to put up with every guest. And that's the like all of training, it's an ideal. Like all acceptance is an ideal. But training is, can we put up with it, bear with it more and more? You know, yes, you know, there are still guests that I have trouble welcoming, but I put up with it more and more. You know, and that's training, you know. And realize we really want to put them up completely, but being human and with our karma, okay, there's some things that just overwhelm us. Okay, that's training. We do our best with it, and then we try to do better the next time it comes up. It'd be like somebody saying in training, I should never get angry. No, if you train, you'll get angry, but can you do better and better with the anger? Or better with the greed? Better with the despair? Not that, wow, I should never despair or ever identify with the despair. You know, it's like if I make a bad mistake, I still have a tendency to have some despair coming up and I have to tell myself. And, you know, remind myself because I'm having trouble letting it go and just let go. Oh, you know, it's just a temporary feeling.
Accepting the difficulty itself. That's
part of the guess you're accepting, that it is.
It's not just the guess, but it's also the difficulty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And in a way, the difficulty is a guess, too, you know. You know, just the fact that it's, you know, just like somebody very nicely put, I have to be willing to be unwilling. In fact, he used to take it back. I have to be willing to be unwilling to be unwilling.
Well, if you get this, I mean, it just can snowball the wrong way without training, because you get the first unwanted guest, and then it's like, I shouldn't be having this unwanted guest. I want to get rid of it. And you have all of a sudden, you have all these
full house.
The full house, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and most of us actually are living with a rather, without training, most people have. They have a lot of guests. You know, there's frequently no room in the inn. It's like, I have all the worries I can accommodate.
No vacancy.
It's like...
That's when you start training.
Yeah, and then it's almost like this is actually real, that you'll be filled with worry. And actually, when a new worry comes along, it has to kick out the old worry just to have room for it. Because it's like, you know, you just can't worry about that much stuff. So it's like...
Share a room.
You know, it's like...
I need a second hole.
You know, it's like... You know, I mean, think of it. You know, you have like... You're worried about what this person thinks about you. And then something more important comes up. And you just drop that. And then you're worried about work. But suddenly you have a lump. You start worrying about the lump, and you stop worrying about work because I just can't accommodate that many that many worries. You know, it's a gift just to be willing to be wherever we are. And it kind of starts changing training around when you realize the gift is just to be with whatever's going on. And this is the vehicle, this is the path. You know, and it's really very simple. Not hard to do, but each moment is the opportunity to do it. You know, like, okay, here I am. Whatever's here, I have to welcome. You know, and just be willing to accept whatever's going on right now, whatever guess I have within me, and whatever guess the world's giving me. In a way, it's all the same stuff. Whether it's an unwanted feeling from within yourself, like, God, I'm feeling inadequate, or an unwanted feeling because this person's just difficult in some way. It's the same thing. It's the same feeling. You know, and there's really no difference. We have to just accept it and just be willing to make space for it. And you know, and just let it all come and go and realize they're all temporary. You know, think in life how many times you felt whatever it is you're feeling. You know, think how many times you've been overwhelmed by something, whatever it is. You know, you had a worry, you were, that very word I always like, we're consumed with something. You know, eaten up with, you know, like somebody's eaten up with envy. You know, and you just, okay, you don't want the envy. You know, it's, you know, and that's why to, when you're really, just like if you are really stuck with things, with the self, actually, what often happens then is you have a lot of fear. You know, if you have a lot of fear, you have a lot of self. And the fear actually pushes away everything. You know, it makes the guest house very unwelcoming. You know, because you almost are guarding it from, you know, bars on the windows. You know, it's like growing up in New York during the high crime days where people would have double locks and then a bar going to the door. And I heard an amazing statistic the other day that the murder rate in Manhattan is 1/10 of what it used to be. That, you know, back 20 years ago, they would have like 500 murders a year in Manhattan. Last year was like 50. You know, kind of just one of those things. And I kind of remember walking around Manhattan realizing people don't have the same, you don't see like every window barred anymore. You know, when I was when I was living there, it was like everything had bars. You know, it's like you just assumed like if there was a window you could break and walk in, people were going to break in, walk in.
Isn't the fear just one of the guests, or is it different somewhere?
Well, fear is a guest, but if you allow it to fill you and you identify with it, if you just see it as a guest, it's okay. The trick, I guess, the distinction I'm making is if you allow yourself to hold on to identify with the fear, then you actually change the whole guest house. If you just allow the fear will always come up. You know, I mean, it's even a functional thing to come up at times. I mean, if I, like, my brakes don't work, to have some fear is very functional. That's part of the body just doing its job. But we're trying not to identify with it and let it control us. For instance, fear can have us want to kick everything else out. Just like people can be afraid of their own karma. And I've met people training, it's like they're afraid that if something comes up, they can't handle it. You know, and...
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
From a Buddhist perspective, is there something unique with that fear?
Nothing unique, but it's probably the strongest of the karma thing. You know, it's, in a way, it's probably our strongest emotion. You know, that's why in our Litany of the Great Compassion, went home to the one who leaps beyond all fear, because it's the emotion that comes up to protect the self. You know, that's the most basic one. This is kind of the, like, oh, house builder. This is sort of the foundation of the self has fear in it. You know, because, and it's even functional. You know, it's like you have to have some, you know, to get through. You know, it's like, like I remember walking the streets of New York growing up. You should have some fear. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. That seems to make a kind of, that's the trickiness of fear, because it has validity in some cases, so therefore we kind of extrapolate that it's always valid or something. It's kind of mixed there.
Well, it's that all the emotions are just just feelings. The trick in training isn't to say the feelings like fear or, you know, or worry or any of these things are fundamentally wrong. It's just we don't need to identify with it. Just see what's going on. Just like greed. Greed, if you think about it, a lot of it is pure. You know, it's like there's not a problem that if I'm hungry, greed arises. It's just like it's not a problem if I'm facing a physical problem that fear arises. It's a normal karmic thing, but I don't have to then carry it around with me and dwell on it and identify with it. Just think, people do identify with their greeds, for instance. But I'm just saying, no, my body wants food or my body wants sex. It's not like, you know, or my body craves something. You know, these are all functional, you know, just feelings that come up and can have and aren't necessarily invalid in the sense that they're just feelings. And sometimes they're good feelings in the sense they're useful things, and sometimes they're not useful things. I mean, some worry itself is okay in the sense that if there's something troubling, to dwell on it and worry about it a bit is reasonable. But you then don't want to identify with it and then not be able to let go of it. And that's the key. Can you just see, okay, now I have to look at this. Fear came up, is there something to look at? Look at it. And then try not to carry it around. Yet the feeling can keep popping up as a guest that keeps coming up. And at times we want to look at it, and at times we want to just let it. Okay, I know you already. It's like worry. I've done it. I've thought it through. This is just a broken track, you know. Or I've thought about this enough. You know, it's now a broken record. You know, and trusting that it, and part of it is applying the Dharma to whatever it is so you can remind yourself it doesn't really matter. You know, and that's why if you really identify with it, it matters. When you have to trust that in a way, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, doesn't matter in the deeper sense. It matters on a surface level. Just like if I'm sick, it matters on a... Yes, it matters. But in a deeper sense, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's like, okay, if I die now, does it matter? And really, why does it? You know, it doesn't matter in a deeper sense.
Yeah, but something that's helped me, you know, not continuously, but on and off for a period of time, is in thinking of fear as an acronym, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. Mm-hmm. And the caveat in that is that the false evidence is what we manufacture over the functionality of the fear, you know, lying, chasing you. Okay, you know, but then there's a whole lot of other stuff that we can throw in with that whole package and so on, you know. So just remembering a lot of times, you know, when I'm in fear, it's false evidence appearing real, then I got to kind of take, it makes me look at it and see what part is there, if there is a functional aspect to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, a lot of fear. You know, fear, it's an emotion. You know, it's like, it's what we do with, in a way, it's like that image of the guest. What we do with the guest, you know, we want to look at it and just see what is good here, what's true here, what does it mean, and then deal with it. So, like, you have worry, fear, anxiety. Well, it's not like there's nothing to, you know, we're not Alfred E. Newman, what me worry. You know, it's sometimes there's things we need to look at, think about, be aware of, to concern yourself. You know, sometimes I realize I haven't taken care of something and suddenly I get this sinking feeling that I blow something, you know, it's just like, years ago, I was asked to produce our, you know, to get a discount for a software. I was supposed to produce my government statement saying we're a nonprofit. And I remember looking online to, and they say, oh, you can find the online, and I look online, and we're not there. And I suddenly go, my God, you mean we've never registered the priory for our nonprofit status in all these years? And with the government, because we weren't in Albany as a nonprofit. And then suddenly, and I thought, oh, God. And then I suddenly thought, let me look in Oakland. And we were in Oakland. We had just never moved it over. And it was like, I remember this was, we had moved here in 1982, so and I remember I called up the IRS and mentioned to them, we've been here like 35 years, and, 30 years, and we're still in the wrong city. And they said, yeah, and they just said, okay, that sounds fine. There was never a reason for you to tell us, so. And I thought, ah. Because I was thinking, my God, this could be a complete mess, if we actually if we've never gotten ourselves properly qualified. I never even thought about it. I assumed all along that, we had done all the right paperwork to be a church. And of course, you never know. Because it's, and there's, kind of. But a lot of, and a lot of the peace we get in training, we think of peace as not having any of these guests here. Well, that actually is delusion. As long as you live, you'll have unwanted guests, in the sense, ones that are enjoyable, pleasurable, feeling good. Training is that you can be at peace with fear, worry, anxiety, and just let them come and go. And it's false to think they won't always be coming and going. But if we don't identify with them, it doesn't matter who comes and goes. And that's training, is learning that you can just be with whatever's there, even if it's something difficult. And it'll just come and go. The difficulties will come and go. Be in a situation that you feel you can't stand or it's too painful, it changes. You change. Yes.
So it's not seeing the changeability of things, really. It's not seeing the impermanence of things. It's like something happens that causes me fear. As fear has come up in the past, but I'm not seeing, I'm not accepting the fact that the changeability of everything that it's going to arise and pass. I think it's permanent. I think it's me.
Yeah, well, that's, again, by identifying with it, the seeing the impermanence allows us to not identify. We all, our identification in a way is making something permanent. I am this, or I can't put up with this. People will think, oh, I can't put up with something. And that's the delusion. And when you see that it's nothing solid there, it's almost like, it starts losing its power and its importance. If it doesn't matter how you feel, it's very freeing. If it matters deeply how you feel, you battle all the time trying to have the right feelings. And it never works.
That can be part of the problem, too, that we love the melodrama of the whole thing.
Well, it's part of what makes the house of self. Just think of it. People often cling very much to their failures or their traumas or all the difficult things. They can even cling to how difficult they are. People will kind of almost be proud of of their messed up karma. This is who I am. I'm difficult. I'm this. I'm that. I'm impatient. I'm, this is who I am. Put up with it. And of course it is your job to put up with it, but you know, in the sense that, but it's not very good for them not to want to change, to identify with it and not to realize they can change and find the real, you know, and let it all start falling apart, letting the structure of self start, you know, coming down. Less self. Or as our message, and one of our favorite lines was always, where there's hurt, there's self. She was always very useful to me. Yet at times she was hurt. And somebody wants to say, wanted to tell her. Where there's hurt, there's self. And naturally, she still had a self, so it wasn't surprising that, you know, it wasn't like she would didn't have a self that could be hurt. It's just it is saying that in a deeper sense, nothing is hurt. And that was true with her. And in a deeper sense, she was fine with it. It's just, you know, it was still hurt. Just like, you know, sure, if something happens to me, I can, my feelings can be hurt. Hopefully I don't carry it around for very long. But actually, you can hurt my feelings or make them feel good. You know, it's like, you know, somebody will do something and I'll feel, well, that feels nice.
So is the Buddha totally beyond self and hurt? Or is that...
No, he would have still had hurt. And in the scriptures, he's, things bother him and hurt and, you know, something happening. It's just, you don't cling to it. It's just, you let it just comes and goes. He has guests like everyone else. You know, by converting a lot of his own karma, he's going to have not much of, you know, you're not going to have the same power. Just like if you're training, you, a lot of the stuff doesn't have the power it has because you don't identify with it. But it doesn't mean that if somebody's up, you know, that he's not hurt by, you know, something, you know, something happening, or actually just being hurt by what's happening to somebody else. You know, like I'm sure, you know, a disciple having a problem could still, you know, who's suffering, you know, the suffering of others is still a guest too, and that hurts, and you have to make welcome. And om to the one who leaps beyond all fear doesn't mean fear doesn't arise, it means we don't cling to it. So the Buddha would have had all the feelings arise. It's just by not clinging to them, they don't have any real power or importance. Just like, again, as long as you live, om to the one who leaps beyond all fear, it wouldn't be very functional not to have any fear ever arise. It just means you don't cling to it. So in the middle of the earthquake, you may feel some, okay, I should, you know, adrenaline rush out of the building. You know, it's even, you know, this is just the body functioning. It's even like our response to real fear is faster than our conscious brain can do, because it'll actually be done by our original primitive, as they kind of often sometimes say, our reptilian brain. You know, and it actually bypasses consciousness. So you'll actually move out of a burning building's falling down on you. You'll move before you even can think about moving, because your brain will, it's a quicker loop in the body. And it's functional, obviously. It's, you know, you don't want to have to think, building's falling, what should I do? Yeah.
Other people interviewed who saved other people in amazing circumstances, and afterwards they were interviewed and they're being praised, and they said, no, it's not like that. You don't even think, you just do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, in a lot of situations, you just respond to what it is. You know, somebody needs help, and you just do it. And some, and sometimes people even die doing those things. And it's just the nature of things. Yeah, we often don't. A lot of times, we'll have an instinctive response either to save ourselves or to save others, because it's the same. Can be the same response or. Thank you.